Let's freaking go. There's all this news about a college football super conference. Could it be that the SEC gets even SEC-er? I'll explain what I mean a little bit later. But will Shade Ryan and the LSU defense have a bounce back weekend here versus the great Ole Miss Rebels offense? Home is, are they great though? That's all coming up, baby. Let's go.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get the drought, and it's the power, power, power. LSU with Carter, it's the power, power, power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get the drought, and it's the power, power, power. LSU with Carter, it's the power, power, power.
LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed. Oh, baby, I've been diving deep into the numbers of Ole Miss's offense. There is one of our patrons, Emil, in our Discord, dropped a lot of analytical data of this matchup, some of which actually looks to be pretty good for LSU. So please go sign up for the PHL Patreon. We got a preview episode of the game with some extra breakdown material all there. And everybody gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail from yours truly. Now, it doesn't matter who you are watching this right now. Let's state something together that will make you, come a little closer, feel better about this game. LSU will not be as bad defensively versus Ole Miss as last year. Okay? They just won't. It is virtually impossible because that was, in the minds of many, the worst defensive performance in LSU history. And it ultimately did end up costing LSU dearly in the long run, right? That was one extra win. And obviously, if you would have found a way to win that game, you would have still truly been in the college football playoff hunt, but that knocked you out. And then, of course, you ended up losing to Alabama anyway. And part of the issue was LSU's defense just did not make plays. Now, was the defensive scheme not the absolute best? Yeah, it's true. There were some blown coverages mixed in there. But what's going to need to be done is Sage Ryan, who was on the field not only for this Ole Miss beatdown, he was on the field for the Ole Miss beatdown all the way back in Oxford in 2021. We need those guys to step up, not so much physically. Yes, we need to go out there and make those tackles, but playing Ole Miss is a mental hurdle defensively. It really is. It requires a lot of communication. It requires a lot of thought processing. And at this point, the LSU defense has not played their absolute best football just yet. I will say, though, that this unit is definitely better. Now, I have gotten a lot of messages this week because I have been, you know, since midway through the summer here, very critical and skeptical of this LSU personnel. And up to this point, they have been better. I thought they were going to get better simply because the coaching was going to get better for LSU on the defensive side of the football, which it has been. What I would also tell you, though, is defense has sometimes as much to do with who you're playing than what you actually do as a defense. What do I mean by that? Well, UCLA's offense had the best half of their season versus the LSU defense. Okay. Then South Carolina, who's not really anything to write home about, had a field day versus your defense. And the USC game was actually pretty good for LSU defensively. But as we've seen up to this point, how much do we truly believe in the USC team? They have not looked as good at all since when they played LSU. So how do you feel about the LSU defense when you pick apart what they've done up to this point, the offenses they have faced have not necessarily been all that great. I've seen a lot of statistical breakdowns, breaking down the first five games of the Blake Baker tenure and the first five games of last year's LSU's defense. Well, in that first five games of the LSU defense last year, the fifth game was Ole Miss. So when you do these stat comparisons, when you look at the defenses of last year to this year, ultimately what happened last year really doesn't have as much bearing on what's going to actually happen this year. But in this case, it will, in that there are so many players that were playing for LSU's defense last year that is back for this year's team, and vice versa is also true for Ole Miss. So do I like this matchup for LSU? No, I don't, because this will be the best offense that they have faced up to this point. Can Sage Ryan and the LSU secondary slow down Trey Harris? It's going to be hard. It's going to be very hard. We have struggled defending against in-breaker routes. Trey Harris is good at pretty much every route on the route tree. Juice Wells is also a good in-breaker. And Jackson Dart is good at throwing those types of routes as well. So can we get something? Can we get enough from the LSU defense to go out there and win this game? They do have one X factor going in their favor, is the Tiger Stadium crowd. We have seen crowd noise and home field advantage play huge, huge, huge roles in games, in particular for teams getting out to a really fast start. Hostile environments can change a whole lot for teams. Okay. Also, and this is semi-minor, but who has Lane Kiffin really beaten that you would consider to be good? Like, really beaten? And the answer is probably last year's LSU team. Okay? Probably last year's LSU team is his best win. Now, he's had some others. On the road in Knoxville a few years ago was really impressive. And he has done a good job of jumping out to fast starts versus top five recruiters. Last two seasons, fast starts versus LSU, fast start versus Georgia, fast start versus Alabama. He can only close out one of those. So Lane is a fast starter versus the elites. He just can't hold on to those leads. So, yeah, I don't think Ole Miss has been as good as people expected him to be. But I will also include a pretty interesting stat from BC Freemoo that 78% of college football teams still have not played the toughest game on their schedule yet. 78%. And it was around that same number for teams that have tougher schedules ahead compared to what they have already played up to this point. So part of the truth in all of this is we don't really know who's good at all. Every single elite SEC team that we consider to be elite going into this season has had one massive blunder, one terrible half of football. The only one who's not really done that up to this point is Texas. And that's really impressive considering Quinn Ewers has been out. Now, they do have a really good backup in Arch Manning, of course, but every single team has had that hiccup. So LSU and Ole Miss, extremely flawed teams in many ways, but I still do think both of these teams are very good. And as you peel back the layers of the onion of this matchup, I do feel, in terms of one game that is on the schedule that has been played up to this point in the season, this is the first real elimination game for the college football playoff in the SEC. It is going to be very, very, very hard for the loser of this team to make the playoff. Very hard. Ole Miss still has Georgia and Alabama on their schedule. That's not going to be pretty. And then, of course, LSU. You take a look at LSU. You still got Alabama on the schedule. But more than likely, if LSU were to lose this game, they're likely not to beat both of A&M and Arkansas in back-to-back road scenarios. So, you see Ole Miss, you see their schedule. Arkansas becomes a lot tougher in Fayetteville. They got their brakes blown off the last time they were there anyway. And even the year, the time they went there before that, Lane Kiffin got blown out by Sam Pittman. So, out of any game that's been on the schedule, this is the first real playoff game. The loser of this game will get their second loss, and the likelihood that they go undefeated the rest of the way becomes minuscule. The winner of this game still has a loss that they can have and still comfortably make the playoff. Comfortably is a little bit of a strong word, but still. That's how big of a game this is. Now, there are other big games in college football this week. Oh, you bet. Tennessee kind of in a playoff elimination game. But Florida, of course, really doesn't have a shot. Alabama welcoming South Carolina to town. What's going to happen there? We'll see. And then, obviously, Oklahoma's definitely not going to make it. Texas, if they lose, no big deal. They could still lose another and be in the playoff. But I don't think anyone is expecting Texas to lose as 14-point favorites, no matter who they play at quarterback. Now, I've spoken my piece, as we always do. Don't forget Tuesday nights at 8:15, Wednesday nights at 6, Thursday nights at 5 are our live stream schedules, pregame, halftime, and postgame shows. We always want to see your beautiful faces. I want to be clear, I'm not going to the game this weekend. I will be in Fayetteville, though, for the game next weekend. And we will be doing a PHO meetup the night before, more than likely at a place in Fayetteville called City Park. Still working on that, okay? Kansas State, Colorado, who do I have? I'm not betting against Colorado the rest of the year. Let's go to Austin P. The fact that we're hoping Sage Ryan could do anything productive to slow down an elite receiver is comical. Yeah, I accidentally made a typo. I meant to say Sage Ryan and the LSU secondary slows down Trey Harris. Now, as Kyle points out, Harris has an ankle injury. That may be LSU's best defense. Look, I made this point on the Sunday night live stream. When it comes to injury luck, this is Brian Kelly's first year where the injury luck has really worked against him. In the first 2 years at LSU, he's mostly had good injury luck, right? He had the Greg Brooks thing was pretty big. But for the most part, he's had better injury luck than most. And where he's gotten very lucky, and you could go back and look at all this research. We did it all on Sunday night. Our patrons have had this research for months now. But Brian Kelly has had the fortune of missing out on the other team's best player getting hurt or a quarterback getting hurt. And that is likely going to be the case next week versus Arkansas as well. So, you know, it's better to be lucky than good. That's what a famous soccer commentator said. I truly do believe it. It's better to be lucky than good. It's better to have good fortune than bad. But, man, if Trey Harris can't fully go, I would be interested in seeing this. Because oftentimes when it comes to point spreads, nothing changes if a non-quarterback isn't playing. But let's just say Trey Harris is ruled out. Will the point spread shift? Or with the chance of Trey Harris being out, could you get a world where you... I'm just going to point this out. Let's just say Trey Harris is out. Could you get a world where Juice Wells gets into the Trey Harris role and he plays like what a lot of people expected him to play back in his prime at South Carolina? Now, Jed asked an interesting question. I believe it comes out on Thursday is when you have to submit the injury report. Okay. Side of Cliff. Tari, our top super chatter from last night. Tari, you got to shoot me an email. I got something I want to send you. Georgia plays Ole Miss plays Georgia and Texas, but not Alabama. Let's see. I think you're actually right. Let me take a look. Oh, you're right. It is Oklahoma and Georgia. My apologies. I don't know why I thought they played Alabama this year. I think I looked at the Georgia or the Oklahoma logo and thought it was Alabama. Okay. Now, there was an interesting teleconference earlier today. All right. So I'll break down how the media schedule works every week for Brian Kelly. All right. So on Monday, he does a press conference at noon that a lot of you see. And he also does like a radio hit with Paul Feinbaum that day as well. Okay. Then on Tuesday, you know, you practice and all of that. And then on Wednesday morning, he does a teleconference. So there's an SEC media teleconference that I do not believe is made available to the public. And then on Thursday, he does another press conference and then proceeds to go do his coach's show after that press conference. So as you can see, there's a lot of media stuff that happens throughout the week. And I have not been able to hear the audio from the teleconference, but there was some interesting verbiage when it comes to Chris Hilton. Okay. Interesting. Now, this is how I have always felt about players. It's hard to stay healthy. Part of who you are as a player is your availability, though. Okay. Now, there's two different types of unavailability. All right, so there's the unavailability that's the injury type, all right? And then you have the unavailability when it comes to discipline, all right? So you have, obviously, players every year that have disciplinary issues. LSU, of course, has had some. They're not Georgia, of course. But in this case, this is injury unavailability, which is, in theory, the better type of unavailability. And it's a more sympathetic, right? With Chris Hilton, you've always felt sympathetic with the injury issues that he's had, all right? And this has been a big, big, big discussion in the Discord and just everywhere. Kelly on Chris Hilton being out to this point, Brian Kelly said, it clearly hasn't affected us. He was a rotational player last year, and year one he had injuries. This is the first year he's been a missing piece. So I would love to hear the full quote. And this is nothing against God Rabelais. I don't know if this is transcribed to a T. Right? So unless we actually hear him say this, because this comes out a little awkward. And I always caution people, when you see any type of quote shared on Twitter and it's explosive or kind of weird, go actually try and find the audio for yourself, right? It's become such a big thing now, people sharing graphics of quotes and stuff like that. Now, we move on to the next quote, all right, part two. Brian Kelly says it's been a complicated injury. Let's get the record straight. Chris has done everything to get back as quick as possible. This has been an injury where the healing has just been slow. Now, we get to part three here. Scroll up. He's put in the time and has the want-to be out there. It's been one of those unusual injuries that has taken so much longer to heal than normal. We'll get him back out there, and I'm certain he will be a welcome addition to our offense. So once again, I didn't hear this quote. This is the only, you know, actual quote that I've seen on this. I've seen other people tweet out some things that Brian Kelly said about Chris Hilton. And guess what? Number one, I should be exonerated. Okay. The actual coach admitted that this injury situation is weird. I tweeted that out a few weeks ago. People wanted to guillotine me before the South Alabama game. Oh, how can you say such a thing? Why would you call it weird? There's no reason to rush him back versus South Alabama. And once again, I am not an insider. It's not what I do. All right. But this has been explained to me as a weird situation. And guess what Brian Kelly says today? This rehabilitation has taken longer than they expected. But no, everybody wanted to rip my face off. And it's weird because you can't talk about Chris Hilton without people getting mad at you for whatever reason. I don't quite get it. He is an unfreaking believably likable guy. He's always been a leader. He's always gone about things the way I understand it, the best way possible. He's waited his turn. You know, he's a higher rated recruit than Malik and BTJ, a faster player than both of them as well. Just not worked out up to this point. Then he dominates spring, dominates summer, dominates fall, to the point where I heard some were saying he could outproduce Kyren Lacy this year. He's got all this chemistry with Gary Nussmeier. And then he had that ridiculous Wisconsin game. So understand, when I say something like that, whenever I say anything about any player, none of it is personal. None of it is personal. And everything I say is with purpose, especially if it's of a situation that's kind of in the balance, important. So it's hard for us to know if he's going to be available for the Ole Miss game. And I know a lot of you are just fatigued, waiting to see what's going to happen. At this point, you just got to cross your fingers and hope. But as Brian Kelly said at the beginning, and this is what I've been consistent with as well, it's not really affected LSU all that much. It's not. LSU's passing attack has been really freaking good. Aaron Anderson has been better than pretty much anyone could have imagined compared to how he played last year. He has been so unfreaking believably consistent. By far, not only the most consistent receiver, the most consistent player on offense, period. I mean, every game has been 60 to 90 yards and about a tutty every game. So LSU's got enough firepower, and him and Chris weren't ever going to play the same kind of role either. But, you know, I think it's important to be fair with every single player. Part of your ability is availability. And it is tough when you're always trying to figure out, oh, is he going to be back? Oh, is this a week? Is this a week? Especially, and this is what really stood out to me, he dressed out like an actual dress out to warm up before the UCLA game. And then before South Alabama, didn't do that. So, there you go. So, I will go listen to the audio. I don't want to come through it right now for obvious reasons. But, look, I don't think BK was being critical of Chris. I know some felt it was like that. But it's just the situation. Okay? As Cliff says, your best ability is availability. No exceptions. Yeah, and once again, you're a little bit more sympathetic if it's just like a 1-year thing, but it's been every year, the injuries. So you know, you're sympathetic as well in that scenario if you're just getting hurt every single season. But, you know, we'll see how this plays out on Saturday. Now, there are other players on the team fighting through it. Hopefully those players can be ready to go for LSU versus Ole Miss. Yeah, Tari, the email's powerhourlsu@gmail.com. We say hi to Dex. We say hi to Austin. We've been getting solid pressure up front. I'm confident we can keep it up versus the Ole Miss offensive line, which is a beatable group. Once again, powerhourlsu@gmail.com. Now, coming up right after this, do I believe LSU is in trouble? Well, one interesting fact about this LSU season, I was going to save this for tomorrow, but I kind of want to just go on and spill the beans now. One stat that really is working against Brian Kelly, and I want your honest opinion on if this is really a thing. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's XYANImaging.com.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. All right, tell me if this is anything to you guys. Brian Kelly going into the season at LSU was 16-11 against the spread. Now, which two teams in the SEC this year have been the best against the number? Well, it's actually LSU's next few opponents. They obviously play Ole Miss this weekend. Ole Miss against the number has been 5-1. Of course, their lone non-cover was against Kentucky, who beat them outright. And then Arkansas is 5-1 against the number. UAB was able to cover the spread in Fayetteville. So both of these teams, 5-1 against the number. Those are going to be your two next opponents. Now, Brian Kelly going into the season, 16-11. This year, 1-4. And then obviously going into last week's game or 2 weeks ago's game, they were 0-4 against the spread. So far, based on Vegas expectation, Arkansas and Ole Miss have done a better job covering. Now, I would say Arkansas's is a little bit more impressive because Ole Miss has just covered versus really bad teams, and Arkansas has covered versus better teams, teams that are, I think most people would consider to be solid this year. But is that anything? I think it is, yet I also think it isn't. I think early season Vegas point spreads from this point forward are going to be very inaccurate with the transfer portal being as volatile as it is. So any ATS data at the beginning of the season could be a little weird. I do think against the spread numbers at the end of the year are a little bit more telling. So it is interesting. Right now, Ole Miss is a favorite versus LSU. So if Ole Miss is really good against the number and LSU hasn't been good against the number, that means you would think Ole Miss is going to win this game. Now, do I believe Ole Miss is going to win this game? I don't know yet. I honestly have gone back and forth on what I think will happen on Saturday night. Both of these teams, you can make very strong cases relative to the rest of the season that they would play outside of maybe Missouri. LSU and Ole Miss are two of the least battle-tested teams in the entire Southeastern Conference. And a lot of SEC teams have backloaded schedules, but LSU and Ole Miss's backloaded schedules are very much backloaded, if that makes sense. Let's go to Tari here. He makes an interesting point. LSU had just missed covering the spread. We've been pretty close to covering them all. So, yeah, we can go game by game. LSU was 3.5-point underdogs to USC. So, yeah, I guess if Nuss makes the throw to Aaron Anderson, you go up by 4, but still, you missed that one. South Carolina, you were close to covering the spread, 36-33. They had LSU, what was it? It was 7.5-point spread. I should know because I bet LSU. Man, that was a disaster. So I guess you're right. The one that's interesting is Nichols because Brian Kelly had always covered the spread versus these smaller non-Power 5 teams, wasn't able to get it done there. And then, of course, UCLA, they were close to covering that spread, 34-17. But was that really a 17-point win for LSU? Maybe. They kind of pulled away, obviously, in the second half, some bad punts from UCLA. And some untimely penalties. But yeah, LSU was close to covering that spread. So it's a good point, Tari. It is. Chance says just win. The point spread is only important to Kayshawn. Huh? We say hi to Tyler. What's going on, Tyler? Good to see you. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm trying to keep my live streams shorter for a lot of different reasons because I know like Wednesday nights can. We like to try and keep those to an hour. Tuesdays normally are longer live streams and then, of course, our post games. But in the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. We'll go until 8 p.m. tonight. I don't really care. But fire them in. And if your question has not been answered yet, feel free to let me know. So, obviously, we'll be getting more into women's basketball as the season draws closer. Pretty excited about that. Fall baseball's around the corner. But as many of you know, 95% of the time, this is an LSU football channel. I want to get into what I feel is somewhat of a smaller story in this, and that's special teams. Can you get that touchdown return from Xavion Thomas that has barely eluded him all year? He's had really good returns all season. Now, not all of them have been for – there really hadn't been like a 70, 80-yard one, but a lot of 30s, 40s, and 50s. It's clear that he's been the best return guy that we've had in quite some time, even though I did appreciate the Gregory Clayton era of fair catching and just catching the damn ball. But I think we are getting closer to that with Xavion. Punting, snapping, kicking, all those things are very important. Now, what else do we know about Ole Miss? Well, they did miss a game-time field goal in a big spot versus Kentucky just a few weeks ago. And outside of that, Ole Miss did not really play close games. Where LSU has an advantage is they've played in a lot of close games this year. UCLA was tight all the way up until, you know, midway through the third quarter where they kind of pulled away. Obviously, South Carolina, high leverage game situation, USC as well. So LSU has played in more slobber knocker, knockout, drag out, tight games. Tari believes we get it done on Saturday night with the Xavion Thomas tutty. Who are the safeties that start Saturday? What's up, Jed? Throwing some love to the Paul Rabels of the world. Let's go lacrosse. I would definitely start Jordan Gilbert. Definitely. He's played really well. And then opposite Jordan Gilbert is a mystery. More than likely, though, that will be Sage Ryan. So Sage Ryan and Jordan Gilbert will be those guys. Jordan Allen, who had some promising moments versus USC, has kind of faded from the lineup, and we've seen more Deshaun Spears, which to me is a good thing. Obviously, he's a safety, or one of the two safeties of the future of LSU football. So I'm really excited to see him develop and grow. And I also think you'll see some Kylan Jackson mixed in there as well. RSX says he wants to go with Spears. Okay. I get down with that. Now, let's talk a little bit about this college football realignment stuff. This is the season where you're going to see everyone point out their perfect college football conferences. Okay. We welcome in James. James, I'll get to your question here in a moment. Everybody, welcome James to the channel. So, college football super conferences, are they coming to college football? Yeah, because there's just too much money to be made. And LSU is one of the programs that are the haves compared to the have-nots. I don't think they are in, like, the elite haves when it comes to, like, television viewership. But they're in the top 10, right? I don't think they're a top 5 TV viewership team. But could we see more reshuffling? I think you will, in terms of leagues and all of that. I think part of why the SEC said, hey, in 2024, we're going to stay with an 8-game conference schedule, and these are the teams you're going to play, because the SEC wants to get as many teams in the playoff as you possibly can. And then in 2025, the SEC did something that I think was asinine, which is flip the schedules over, and you're playing these same exact teams. So you expanded the conference, but while you did that in year two of the expanded conference, you're shortening the rotation even more than what you already had it, which it was so dumb with the permanent cross-division rival. So why do I think the SEC elected to do that? Well, it's because this was coming. They're like, hey, let's just run it back with the same schedule. And maybe some people would view that as even. And we keep some of the rivalries. And then whatever happens in 2026 happens. So, what does that mean exactly? That means LSU could get more TV revenue. What I think the big thing is teams want unequal television revenue. Teams do not like that their cut of the TV revenue, Alabama's, is equal to that of Vanderbilt. They don't like that. And I get it. If you're bringing more to the table, should you deserve a bigger piece? In theory, yeah. But then you're just always cutting off the next head, cutting off the next head, cutting off the next head, cutting off the next head. We also had a big change when it comes to transfer portal windows. Those have been shrunk in half. You will still have a December window. You will still have an April window. But I don't want to talk portal now, because anytime I think transfer portal, I think of two things. Number one, how freaking crazy it's gotten. And number two, how we have all these upperclassmen selfishly quitting the teams. I mean, the South Carolina linebacker that did it should be banned from college football. That is the most selfish thing I've ever seen. He was a 2020 recruit, so you already have a fake extra year of eligibility. And he was playing a lot for South Carolina. He was playing a lot. Now, was he starting? No. But he was playing a lot for South Carolina. He went to Shane Beamer's office and he said, look, I want a red shirt this year, which technically means, hey, I want to quit on this year, but I want to hang around. And I'm so glad Shane Beamer told this guy to kick rocks. Dude, if you're going to do that to my face, you're out. I could understand maybe if you're a freshman and you were used sparingly on punt team and you've played four games, yeah, you can be replaced. But this guy was getting rotational reps, and they were getting ready to play Alabama this week. Still not good enough. I'm going to quit on the team. Drives me wild. Drives me wild. But what do I know? I know I sound like old man yelling at clouds. Don't quit on your team. Matthew Saluka. Let's go to James. And this is a difficult question for a lot of LSU fans to answer. My concern is LSU goes 0-4 in the next four games. If so, the house will burn down. Thoughts? He says, I grew up in Baton Rouge, so I have nothing but love, but you are concerned. All right. I will tell you this, and this is just as straight up as I possibly could be. Going 0-4 in the next four games is very much plausible. It's plausible. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen, because it will not happen. All right? Unless there is a truly ridiculous injury or something of that nature, LSU will not go 0-4 in their next four games. Now, what you could say, though, depending on how this Ole Miss game actually goes, you could have a world where LSU is an underdog in all four of these games. Let's say Ole Miss comes into Tiger Stadium on Saturday and blows LSU out. Would LSU actually be favored at Arkansas? They probably would be, considering Arkansas's quarterback will probably be out in Taylen Green. So that'll be baked in. That'll probably be like a 5-point swing in the spread. Still, LSU is only going to be favored in one of these games over the next four. A&M, they're likely going to be underdogs. I don't think, though, that they would go 0-4, because the SEC is so wacky and random that I don't think any of these four teams are going to play at their absolute maximum versus LSU, and vice versa is also true. LSU is not going to play poorly in all four of these games, knock on wood. So when you mix in the randomness, the most likely thing to happen over the next four games is LSU goes 2-2. That is the most likely scenario, which obviously wouldn't be good because if LSU went 2-2, they're essentially out of the playoff. They just are. Now, could they get in at 9-3? Yeah, they could. They really could. But a 10-2 season is a lock to get you in. It's why the USC loss was so big, because you would have so much more wiggle room up to this point. But is there a world where LSU loses all four of these games? Yes. Yes, there is a world. All right. It's a good question, James. James, let me know your response, man, because a lot of people are going to say James is a negatiger. Just negative, negative, negative. All right, so Brian has a question from Power Hour NFL. We'll do it. Why not? Chiefs fans are coming at me in the section for me saying Kansas City's defense is carrying them and Pat is off to a slow start. Is Patrick Mahomes elite to me right now? So, yeah, I didn't think the Chiefs' performance offensively was as great as many people thought it was, because there was just so many wide-open completions. But that was the first game where we saw Pat do a lot of the special kind of scramble types of plays that we know him for. Are the Chiefs the best team in the NFL? Yes. Do they have the best defense in the NFL? Yes. Do they have the best coaching staff in the NFL? Yes. Do they have the best quarterback in the NFL? Yes. Outside of Jaden Daniels. And Joe Burrow. Honestly, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, 1-2 in EPA per play, adjusted by Ben Baldwin. So look, I'll be real with you. Will the Chiefs three-peat? I don't think so. I think they'll lose in the AFC title game in a rematch to the Ravens. Let's go to Jared's super chat. Thank you so much, Jared. Any topic you want to get to, we'll go straight to it. And Jared wants to talk Spencer Rattler. Okay, we could do that. Now, let me ask you guys this. And this is something I've been contemplating. Now, on Power Hour NFL, I do Saints videos, and there's nothing in my Power Hour NFL like channel that says I am Louisiana affiliated. Right? I have a Joe Burrow painting in the backdrop, but I only do film studies and I have like a small little logo on there, right? The same stuff on Power Hour NFL is going pretty well. And on top of that, this did not shock me. This has been the case for a while. The Saints' local television market is a top five local television market in America. The Saints have an elite state of Louisiana when it comes to NFL viewership. And as my good buddy Sean Fox, who's probably, to me, he's the best radio host in North Louisiana. He's a play-by-play voice of ULM. Sean Fox does daily Saints segments, and they do really well in North Louisiana, where there's a bunch of Cowboys fans. Okay? Saints fandom is very underrated on a national scale, but you don't see the national shows talk about them. I don't know why. Okay, because they're not the Cowboys or the Steelers. But that's not here nor there. And the funny thing on the NFL channel is my Cowboys videos tank. They are the worst when it comes to viewership. And I like Dak. I've been mostly pro-Cowboy. And you think going into it, the Cowboys are going to be by far the most popular team. No. But I ask this, type Y for yes, type N for no. If I were to do a Saints live stream on Power Hour NFL, will you tune in? I've never done like a team kind of live on Power Hour NFL. Let me know down below, because I would need each and every one of you to go for me to justify, because I don't know if I want to build another live stream channel, because even though it's not as much work as cutting a film study and all of it, it's still work. Fire the tight end question again, Cliff. When we're sitting in here, it could get tough. Okay. Let's talk about Spencer Rattler. I think they made the right decision. I think they did. I understand some wanted Jake Haener to get a start because, you know, he was a QB2 and stepped in. And maybe Jake Haener is the guy. But I do feel the locker room wants Spencer Rattler, because he does have a better arm than Jake Haener, who doesn't have a terrible arm. But I also think Spencer Rattler on the rookie deal is very tempting. It's very tantalizing. And I think if you are a Saints fan, you're trying to decide, do I want Jake Haener or do I want Spencer Rattler? Understand value in this situation. Going into that final season, Spencer Rattler lost his job to Caleb Williams. You do understand Spencer Rattler was the number one quarterback on so many different NFL draft boards. And then he goes to South Carolina and starts two full seasons behind terrible offensive lines. So he's played really good competition, played in pro-style offenses at South Carolina. He's played in two different conferences, has an unfreaking believable amount of starts, a really high football IQ. This is definitely one of these situations where you want to see what you have. Right, I think the upside is clearly higher than that of Jake Haener. So I think they made the right decision giving Rattler the start over Jake, even though Jake's story is really good. And I think Spencer Rattler's going to do fine. I do. I also think one thing that's kind of helping Spencer Rattler on the national scale is he's not even the biggest rookie quarterback making his debut this weekend. Anytime a rookie quarterback makes his debut, it's a big story because we love youth. We love rookies. Well, we love the next great thing. Everybody's going to be watching Drake May versus the Texans. Everybody. All right. Spencer Rattler is a drop in the bucket compared to that story. And rightfully so, right? Drake May was a number 3 overall pick. The Patriots are the Patriots. So it kind of works out there, because if not, every national show would be about Spencer Rattler starting first game. There you go, Pierce. I appreciate that, man. I thought Pierce was going to say, hey, I'll watch pretty much anything football. I thought Pierce was going to say, yeah, I'll watch pretty much anything with my favorite content creator, Carter the Power Bryant, in there. Chance says Rattler was really bad at OU. Really bad? Come on. I'm sorry to get carried away. Was he great? No. Was he really bad in comparison to all of other Lincoln Riley quarterbacks? Yeah, I guess you could say that. And look, you follow up. Would you say Rattler was Lincoln's least successful QB ever? How would you rank Lincoln Riley's QBs? Obviously, number one for me would be Kyler. And then number two, I'd probably say Baker. And then number three, I would say Caleb. And then obviously number four would be Hurts. And then after that, how would you put him? I don't know. It's a good question, though. I guess it comes down to Spencer Rattler versus Miller Moss now. I don't know. One thing I will say, and I talked to Blake about this privately, so I'll go check out Blake. He covers all of college football. I couldn't do that. Would I do it if I got paid enough money to do it? Yes. Do I love all of college football? And do I like, I mean, Michigan is one of my favorite teams to watch. All right. I like watching teams that don't have a quarterback and see if they can find ways to win. And Michigan does not have a quarterback right now. But I actually don't sit down and watch a lot of Ohio State. Like, I think Ohio State's the most boring team in college football. They've got the most exciting offensive set of skill guys every single year. And then they got a freak, true freshman wide receiver. But Ohio State is like just so anti-college football. They never play compelling games. They never play compelling games. Unless, of course, it's Michigan or the Georgia playoff game. But outside of that, tell me a really compelling game that they have played. Now, I know for some of our older viewers, like a Skipper always makes this joke in the Discord. Hey, guys, if I don't make it, it's because of this LSU team. Yeah, LSU, as LSU fans, you would like your heart rate to go down. But that's not LSU football. We like to make things interesting versus a lot of teams we play. You know, unless your quarterback is Joe Burrow, you're not going to blow teams out. But I do get into a spot where there's a lot of college football teams I don't like to watch. And one is USC. I cannot watch USC from the season opener until now, because I do think that that team is talented, but they're underperforming. And what really pisses me off is that we lost that damn game. We lost that damn game. God, it pisses me off. So it's kind of been painful for me to go back and watch Miller Moss in USC. I don't hate USC. Let's go to Cliff and his tight end question. When are we going to see more production from the tight end position not named Mason Taylor? That's a good question. Pegasus says, how much more production can you get at tight end with the way Mason's playing, honestly? All right. It's a very good question. Honestly, it is a very good question. It comes down to who you are offensively. All right. Now, I'm about to say something that will come off as very anti-Joe Sloan, but it's not. And you can just kind of see it in the way, you know, I do film reviews and the things that I say and all of that. I would not call plays the way Joe Sloan calls plays. Now, I'm not saying Joe Sloan is a bad play caller. Now, he's had bad games. USC game wasn't great. South Carolina game wasn't great. But I thought the UCLA game was a work of art. I really do think so. Like, I saw people piling on him, just to pile on him during the UCLA game. I was like, no, he's actually sequencing his play calls really well. But when it comes to football and you want to run more tight end sets, you want to run more 12 personnel, well, most 12 personnel and 13 personnel, which is multiple tight end sets, are done from under center, right? Most of them are. You rarely see shotgun 12 personnel. So that's the first thing. We don't run anything under center. And one drastic change I would make is change that. Run. I think you will see more spread offenses do more under center stuff. So if you are in shotgun, you're going to run a lot of 11 personnel. Now, are there teams that run 12 personnel out of shotgun? Yeah. I mean, you can do it. I'm not saying that you can't. So that's one thing. The second thing is Mason Taylor is pretty damn good. He just is. And I understand he played a lot as a true freshman and Pimpton didn't and Tre'Davious Green isn't. But Mason Taylor did not need a transition to the tight end position. He played actual tight end in high school. Kamarion Pimpton did not. Tre'Davious Green did not. And Pimpton's blocking has gotten better. And Tre'Davious Green has done some good things this year. But they're just not as complete of players as Mason Taylor. Now, are they better receivers than Mason Taylor? Sure, they have larger catch radiuses. But are they faster than Mason Taylor? They're probably about, all three of them, probably about the same in pace. Do they run better routes than Mason Taylor? Slightly, probably so, because they are, you know, more of your pure receiver types at tight end. But Mason Taylor is a tight end in the way that tight ends are supposed to be tight ends, right? Like, I'm not even sure if I consider like a Travis Kelce as like a tight end the same way that George Kittle's a tight end, or the same way that Gronk was a tight end, or Gonzalez, if you will. Kelce's kind of a hybrid slot receiver, but he's also done good blocking over the years. So as far as other tight ends playing two tight end sets, you also have to ask this very important question. Are you going to run two tight end sets just for the sake of running two tight end sets? Just to give different personnel groupings out of two personnel set, or out of 12 personnel and all of that? Are you doing it just for the sake of formational diversity? Or is there a purpose behind it? Now, this is something else. If you are going to play two tight end sets, you must, it is a non-negotiable for this to work, you must take a wide receiver off the field. Rarely in 12 personnel are you taking a running back off the field and keeping three wide receivers on the field. More often than not, a team will just, if you want to go five wide, you'll just put the running back out wide instead of bringing in another tight end. It's just not how it's done. So rarely do you have 0-2 personnel sets, right, where it's zero running backs, two tight ends, and three receivers. Now, at this point, is Kamarion Pimpton a better football player than C.J. Daniels, Kyren Lacy, Aaron Anderson at this point in their careers? No. Is Tre'Davious Green better than those three wide receivers? No. Now, before the season, I would have said, yeah, I mean, I could see two of those guys surpass Aaron Anderson in terms of targets and playing ability, but Aaron Anderson has kicked ass this year. He has been the most consistent player. Do we want those guys on the field, or do we want them off the field? Well, I want them on the field more than not off the field. And do we really want to take Mason Taylor off the field at all at this point? No. Atari says, I love Mason Taylor, but he doesn't break enough tackles for me. True. He's not a tackle breaker. But I would push back on this, Atari, in two different ways. Number one, tell me the tight end who is great at breaking tackles in the SEC. There's not many. The best ever at it is now the best, arguably the best tight end in the NFL right now is Brock Bowers. There's just not many like those kinds of athletes at tight end who are elite at tackle breaking after the catch. Now, are there some? Yeah, there's some. But that is very rare. And on top of that, Tari, it's kind of the same thing as saying, yeah, I want my catcher to be a great hitter. Right? Because your catcher matters so much more as a fielder than he does as a hitter. Now, would we prefer Pudge Rodriguez and Mike Piazza? Sure. But on the list of things that's important for that player to do, it's low, right? I need my tight ends to be able to motion. I need my tight ends to be able to block. I need my tight ends to be able to catch. I need my tight ends to be able to run routes. I need my tight ends to be able to leak and sell the leaks and really get along well with my offensive tackles. I need my tight ends to occasionally play fullback, wham block, all those things. All those things are more important than breaking tackles. Whereas at running back and at receiver, broken tackles is higher on the list in terms of importance, right? And they are just better athletes or more explosive. So, yeah, I mean, Would we like to see Mason break more tackles? Yeah, but I would also say Mason's been very explosive. You know, the UCLA catch, he was wide open in the flat. Still, that was a nice explosive game. Then South Alabama, we got some explosiveness, you know, on the deep throw or the middle, a lot of which was Garrett Nussmeier's precision passing. And it's also interesting, the last time Ole Miss played LSU, Mason Taylor catches a ball in the flat, breaks a tackle for a huge game. Now, some of that was piss poor tackling technique, but I think Mason has gotten better in that aspect. So, yeah, would you like Mason Taylor to break more tackles? Sure. But for me at the tight end position, it's the same thing as a catcher being able to hit. If my catcher bats 260, I could live with it. All right. Not everybody's going to have a Brad Cressy. I probably should have said Brad Cressy. Or how about this for my LSU diehard baseball fans? Not everybody can have a Micah Gibbs. How about that one? Now, that's a deep cut. Micah Gibbs is a nice guy, too. Luke Haas, good tight end for Arkansas, who is having a not great year. And that's not entirely his fault. But Luke Haas is pretty good. If Luke Haas wants to transfer to LSU, I would welcome him with open arms. But yeah. Now, that'll just about do it for me. Big shout out to all our super chatters. We had two tonight, Brian and Jared. Let me make sure I did not miss any Venmos, Cash Apps, or super chats. Okay, Kari, I think you emailed me. There you go. Send me your address in a following email so I can send you a card, my friend. Okay, what's up, Tari? Tari dropped another super. And we'll answer it. For a creative ideal, all three tight ends, 11 personnel red zone. Okay, so all three tight ends. So that would be, what, 13 personnel? Or what you're saying is spread. Pimped it out wide and then put Green out wide. I actually like that. But you know, Tar, you know me pretty well. Jared knows you pretty well. You know, the one thing I cannot stand. So you meant 13. You know, the one thing I cannot stand. That's funny, JJ.
Is tightening everybody in. If Joe Sloan does this weekend, I will
jump into a river. According to NFL Fox, the Saints were voted the best uniform in the NFL. This was conducted by 110,000 votes. Now, are the Saints the best uniforms in the NFL? I can't say. I mean, I'd be biased. I think, ironically, their alternates are the best in the NFL. I don't want to see the black helmets again, though. What, we're 0-4 with the black helmets, with the alternates. But, yeah, who are my favorite uniforms in the NFL? I think the best helmet in the NFL are the Eagles. The wings, yeah, those are cool. I know a lot of you don't like the Eagles. I like the Bengals. I mean, there's some uniforms that just don't do it for me at all. I think the worst uniforms are Alabama's. I'm serious. Like, they're the most boring. When Alabama wears their road uniforms and it's that all-white uniform with the red helmet, that is the least drippy uniform you'll ever see. Harrison M., that's funny. Cliff, you can't say Cowboys. Come on. And you can't say Falcons either on here. We're not going to let you get away with that. The Ravens. Okay, if you're an LSU fan, you should like the Ravens uniforms. You know whose uniforms are? I've always liked the 49ers uniforms. It's just iconic. And it could just be that they've had so many, like, legendary players. But I will say, if I were to give you the best uniforms in the NFL, it's the Detroit Lions. Their new uniforms are the definition of clean. Like, I kind of want them to win the Super Bowl for them having that uniform design. Okay. Yes, the zebra all-white Bengals uniforms. Oh, God. And it's not zebra, obviously. Those are the icy whites. Woo! Those are clean, man. Those are clean. Thoughts on Ravens versus Commanders? Yeah, so arguably the two best quarterbacks in the NFL right now, Lamar and Jaden. You know, they get compared a lot to each other, and they should be in terms of, you know, their history, right, with being the best runners we've ever seen at the quarterback position. You know, to go along with Cam and a few others, Eric Crouch for you throwbackers. Tommy Frazier, how about that? There is a really fun photo of Lamar and Jaden after a Monday night game before Jaden became Jaden. Obviously, the Ravens are a more complete team. Commanders' defense in terms of EPA per dropback is still bad. And look, they blew out the worst quarterback in the NFL this past weekend. So I'm still going to go with the Commanders here, but the Ravens are playing really well. And, man, Derrick Henry. Whew. Whew. Oh, come on, Cliff, please. Who would be... Let me see. I think overall, the NFL uniforms are, most of them are pretty good. I really do think so. I don't think that there's any, like, trash ones other than the Browns' old uniforms. Ugh. I like the Seahawks. Some things it's a little busy. The Seahawks throwback uniforms. Nasty, bro. All right, we'll talk soon. Tomorrow at 5 p.m. It is. We got to keep it going. JJ comes in hot. We'll keep it going. So, JJ, get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. I was getting ready to go. I smell it. Wife made chicken quesadillas tonight, and I was supposed to save that for the end. See what I did, JJ? See what you made me do? We'll keep it going, man. Rashid Shaheed is questionable. No, JJ, I blame. Hey, this is not me complaining. Inflation has dried a lot of people's super chats. So I'll take them whenever I can get them. Now, lucky enough, I've been able to make up for it in other ways, but it still hurts. You know, super chats still are the biggest, like, revenue driver. I just think it's just weird, though. Like, as much as I love to break down this stuff, like, analytically, and this is actually a point that JJ made a few years ago. I think it was JJ before the 2022 Alabama game. Do you really want to bet against LSU getting points at home in a night game in Tiger Stadium? Do you really want to do that? You know, the last time that was the case was 2022 Bama. Do you really want to do that? Yeah, JJ, just text me. You got my number. And I think it was you. It was either you. I think it might have been Cliff. It might have been I get it all mixed up. Do you really want to bet against that? I would probably say no. I would probably say no. You know, it's the same thing with the Georgia game. Georgia being slight favorites. Do you really want to bet against Alabama at home as an underdog? It just seems like a losing proposition. Right? So it might just be as simple as that. Okay. Spencer freaking Rattler. Diego Pavia, dude. I had to take my dog to get some shots today. It's still emotional, man. It's still so emotional to take your dog to go get shots. You don't sound like see your dog squealing hardly at all. I don't pay attention to the rankings, JJ, but I still think they're 13th. I think that's it. I normally start to tune into the rankings during the college football playoff period because we shared a stat a little bit earlier. 78% of teams in college football have a harder schedule remaining compared to easier. Where like in the NFL, it's about like 50-50 in terms of average team strength. I wish American Patriot was in here. Anytime I bring up like dog kind of stuff, it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. Okay. So I've not gotten the injury report yet, but I saw Wilson Alexander tweet out, Caden Durham is probable, which means he's probably going to play. Kyle Parker is out for Ole Miss. CJ Daniels and Chris Hilton are questionable. One thing I thought that was very interesting was I'm not like a super UFC guy, but I love it. I do love it, like when it comes to actually sitting down and watching the fights. I don't keep up with the day-to-day, that's what I mean. But there are like rumors out there that Dustin Poirier will get the fight in New Orleans. And that needs to happen. Has UFC ever been in New Orleans before? I'd love to see it, man. I do have one thing. If they were to do, James, we're going to have to fight over this. We're going to have to fight over this. He says, I enjoy your show, mostly quietly watch. You said the Oreo Coke Zero was not good. Dude, the Oreo Coke Zero is fire. Now, if for some reason Dana White Googled Chubby Bruno Mars talking about LSU football and my channel popped up, I would love to be involved with the UFC New Orleans, but this would be my request. All right, you guys know I like seeing my friends win. And I wouldn't say that this guy is like a close friend of mine, but I've seen his come up and he deserves this more than anyone else. If UFC were to do something in New Orleans, I would want Hold the Mayo to be involved in some way. Have him as a sideline reporter. Have him as a correspondent. This guy loves UFC. He's become by far the most talented content creator in New Orleans. I like Jono Barnes as well, but I would want Hold the Mayo to be involved if UFC is in New Orleans. And I'll also say this, Dustin Poirier, you always have an open invite. You're one of my favorite athletes ever. I still got to try his hot sauce. Him and Daniel Cormier, I'm always going to show love to the 337. Always. Okay? Cassie. So, Cassie, this is why I'm angry at you. I do have a bone to pick with you, Cassie. All right. Cassie only tunes in to my LSU channel. And little does she know. Okay. And James is still angry at you about this Coca-Cola opinion. Little does Cassie know that in terms of non-Tennessee fan content creators on YouTube, I've gotten pretty sizable when it comes to Tennessee content creation on the SEC channel. I do a Tennessee show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Now, is the viewership as high as this? No. Will it ever be as high as this? Probably not. But I thought for sure, well, Cassie tunes into my Power Hour LSU stuff, her being a Tennessee fan, she would tune into any of my Power Hour SEC stuff. But no, Cassie's never commented under a single SEC video, never come to one of my Tennessee live chats. Cassie, what are you doing? Like, I have content that is catered to you. And I posted a Megan Maroney remix today on my Instagram. She's got a song, Tennessee Orange. Do I have a YouTube on sports cards? I do. NoOffseason.com. We're partners here. NoOffseason.com. Okay. But James, to go direct on YouTube for my sports car channel, I am live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on the Football Card Quest. That's all you got to do. Football Card Quest. All right. But I do one-on-one sports car consultations as well. It's been a fun business for me as well. So if you have any sports car questions, I'd love to do a consultation with you. Just hit me up at Car to the Power or at Power Hour LSU. Shoot me a message on Twitter and we could do that. Okay. Oh, this is such a Tennessee thing. Sorry, hun. I never catch it when you're... Oh, man. My wife's family talks like that, too. They'll drop a hun. They'll drop a hun. Sorry, hun. I love the huns. So I'll put up the injury report here. Okay. Oh, we got Pierce. We got a ban Cassie now. It'll make my day that a PHLer who's been a Tennessee fan for so long would go comment under my actual Tennessee videos. You could say, and Cassie, you could brag to all the other Tennessee fans. You could say, "Hey, I've been a Carter day one, even when he wasn't doing Tennessee content." So the three bottom ones are interesting, JVR Suggs and Jalen Lee. Jalen Lee, obviously not really a factor. JVR Suggs, probable. Caden Durham, of course, that's not really a shock. I think he will be good to go. I've been told it, the day after it happened, I was told the foot injury wasn't too bad. And as we've referenced in the PHL Patreon, the CJ Daniels questionable situation has been interesting. West Weeks being doubtful is fascinating, which means Debo Atkins is going to play a lot, more than likely, because I don't think you can go coast-to-coast with just two inside linebackers versus Ole Miss, especially with two road games the following weeks. So there you go. Chris Hilton Jr., questionable. There you go. So we're not just because she's a Cowboys fan. I still can't believe it though. The zero. I thought going into it as a fan of Oreos and Coke Zero, I thought going into it that I was just going to hate it. But no. All right, here's what we're going to do. Next 5 to 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super, we'll keep it going. I don't mind doing a 3 hour. Normally this one's only supposed to be an hour. Oh my god. Yeah. That it's viral tweet today. We're canceling each other over food takes today. What is your most cancelable food take? And someone said Greek food is terrible. No. Chris breaks out. Remember, I've been singing his praises since that cursed Texas Bowl. Oh yeah, the Jontre Kirkland reverse pass. I look at Pegasus. Oh, shout out all the cheerleaders. Love your service. Yeah. And what Pegasus doesn't admit is that he's a Texas A&M fan. Those are his favorite cheerleaders. Kidding. They do not have cheerleaders, as many of you know. I have no problem with the A&M yell leaders. I actually am normally a fan of uniqueness. So the fact that A&M is bold enough to have no cheerleaders but yell leaders, all the power to you. But Pegasus? I was in class. One of my really, really, really good classmates, one of the nicest people, she was a Tiger girl, and she ended up being a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. So there you go. I do not disrespect Connor and Tanner and Blade. So there you go. Now,
that'll do it for me.
Shout out once again to some late super chatters here, James. And top super chatter of the evening goes to JJ. Don't forget about Jared, BT, and Tari via Cash App. We really appreciate you, okay? We'll be back live tomorrow at 5, baby. It is
Power Hour LSU. Boom!
And tonight, we're doing chicken quesadillas.